Hey guys, welcome to Toxic Podcast. I'm back. This is, of course, my podcast that I host alone. I would not wish it on anyone else, where I consume and process toxic media. Toxic media, that's a genre I invented myself. It's any form of content that, regardless of quality, is genuinely emotionally exhausting or taxing to consume. I'm sorry that I've been away. I missed you. I'll never leave you again, unless I get depressed again. Wow, 2019, huh? Let's get to the show. It's been a very toxic month. I have watched a lot of toxic films this month. I wish that I had the time to discuss all of them with you. Daddy's Home 2, Solo, Crimes of Grindelwald. I tried to do an episode where I talked about The Fault in Our Stars. That turned out to be a mistake. What am I thinking? What am I thinking with these picks? You remember when I thought I was going to do a Blackfish episode and talk about how that whale got driven insane? Jesus. So this is the first episode of Toxic Podcast in a while, and am I repeating myself? I wanted to swing for the fences with this one. I wanted to do something that's been on my list for a while. I wanted to do an absolute toxic monolith, something that may even be so toxic that it's like almost unwise to tackle. And I picked The Passion of the Christ, friends. This episode is called I Still Know What You Did Last Supper. Oh my god, what a Mark Twain award? Jesus. Thank you. I guess I'll put it with the others. I guess we should get right to it. What should we do? Do I have anything to apologize for? Well, obviously. It's an abrupt cut. We were doing such smooth podcasting up to that point. All right, well. So, as I mentioned, we are talking about The Passion of the Christ today. There's a lot going on with that movie. There's
a degree to which I almost said, like, sometimes we might have to talk about the movie without talking about the guy who made it. And then I realized that's a euphemism for separating the art from the artist, which is fucking garbage. But then I also realized that in a sense, and I hope that I'm not grotesquely using the fact, like, I hope I'm not adding this to my podcast for prurient interest in a cynical, like, amoral way. But, like, the fact that this brutally violent, ridiculously anti-Semitic, insane, just off the wall, crazy, torture epic comic book adaptation of the story of Jesus was made by none other than Mel Gibson, a guy who is documented as like stumbling out of a car drunk and literally saying like the Jews control the world and like are responsible for all of their problems, is on record saying like horribly racist things, horribly vile, violent, sexist, abusive things. A man who perhaps one of the original canceled men. Again, not to be flippant about a very serious thing, but like Mel Gibson is one of the first people that, I mean, that's not obviously, people have been canceled all throughout history. What is canceling? Jesus. Oh God, I'm the worst. But certainly Mel Gibson went away and now frighteningly he's coming back. And the rehabilitation of Mel Gibson is disgusting and depressing to see. And I don't know exactly why it is. I don't mean to like put on a tinfoil hat. Like sometimes I even feel like the big movie companies are like, hey, yeah, the public is kind of cool with the people who hate Jews. You know, maybe it's okay. Mel Gibson himself is such a knot of like, you know, I need to talk about this property. In doing so, I can't not talk about Mel Gibson, but I also, you know, it's one of the perpetual toxic podcast problems, which is the theme of this podcast immediately causes me to wade into something that like maybe it's just stupid and like not helpful for me to be splitting hairs about and hemming and hawing about and like trying to figure out like how do I integrate the real life shittiness of Mel Gibson and like talk about it in the context of his weird artistic Rorschach projections into this film. Like that's, again, it feels like a cynical, prurient, amoral thing to try to fold into my podcast. And I almost don't want to do it, but I also cannot ignore the MG factor. Sorry. And I just, what a, I mean, I don't even, where do I begin or end with this movie? The Passion of the Christ is such a scary, it's, I also, like, I don't want to, the reason, well, you know, I always need to load myself up. Okay. All right. Okay. Chill on that metaphor. But I always need to fix myself like a heaping helping of podcast. I'm like, oh, I want this to be a good episode. So I'm going to make it really, really difficult for myself. Fucking that's what I do with everything. Everything has to be so hard. Why does everything have to be so hard, Alejandro? Can't you just live? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that in front of you, my boss babies. Do I want to talk about the history of Passion? Do I want, like, it's just such a, it looks bad. It's bad. I was worried that it was going to be good. I mean, I wasn't worried that it was going to be like good, but I was worried that it was going to be like well made. I was worried it was going to be like Triumph of the Will. Have I ever seen? I shouldn't be throwing that reference around for laughs. Oh God! And I'm going to need to talk about anti-Semitism in talking about this movie. I was just about to say what a complicated world we live in. Jesus. This is why I had to come back from hiatus to do this. Okay, let's just get into the movie. I feel like I always do this thing where I'm like, and I do this with everything. Why can't you just do it? Why can't you just start? I do this. I'll sit in my bed for like 20 minutes being like, I have to shower. Okay, time to prepare to shower. Okay, I need to shower. I gotta shower. You're not doing it. Well, I'm not ready. So The Passion of the Christ begins with a Bible verse. It's Isaiah 53, I think. I don't know if it's a verse. This movie proved to me that I was surprisingly Bible illiterate. I read the Bible in college because I read all great myths in college. But, you know, I wasn't raised religiously. I wasn't raised with God. He certainly got his in the end, that fucker, but... I, in watching this, like, just sort of realized there's, like, a lot of gaps in my, like, knowledge of these stories, and, like, there were certain characters I just didn't know who they were, and but also the movie doesn't, I don't know. I also, like, I assure you that I just don't know what the subtitle situation is or should be. I mean, like, I saw it with English stuff. The whole movie is in a different language. Everything about this movie, and I feel a little bit guilty, like, talking about the fact that this movie is ridiculously funny. But, like, everything about this movie is so fucking nutballs, hilariously. The whole movie, and I think it's real, like, I don't think, the movie is in three different languages, Aramaic, Hebrew, and Latin. There's no English in the movie. And nothing happens. And the, oh my God, that devil figure, that sexy androgynous devil, God, I can't believe what an... That's the other thing about, like, the genre of toxic media lends itself specifically to these crazy auteur projects. These, like, I'm going to do everything myself. Like, I understand it, this was a largely, like, self-funded, self-made Mel Gibson project. This is Mel Gibson's vision. And when a vision is so specific and it just, like... It honestly reminds me when I was like 10 years ago, I read that crazy conservative Glenn Beck who used to be on Fox News and then he's founded The Blaze and shit. I once read one of his, he wrote like a Christmas novel and it's just like such a crazy Rorschach test. Can you guys hear my stomach, my little tum rumbling? Sorry about that. like, I guess all stories, I'm about to say something stupid about art, but like all stories become like a, and I feel like I've used the phrase Rorschach test like a million times. Ugh. But like all stories are like a microcosm of the person telling the story and like you can reverse engineer every story. And like you're not, I mean like the death of the author, apparently you're not supposed to, but like fuck the death of the author. Oh my God, I was made to feel so stupid in college by so many people because I was like, the death of the author is bullshit. How could you ever extricate a text from its creator? That's insane. And now, you know, I mean, I don't know what like literature says about the author, but like, obviously we live in a time where the relationship between creator and art is so salient, especially because our creator class is in a sense forced to participate in their art in a sense. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be fucking evil. What I'm saying is it. I tied myself in a knot. No one should be evil. I'm a very smart boy. Okay, we started with a Bible verse, Isaiah 53. It's about Jesus, how he got beat up for us. And and that's what this movie is about. So we open in the woods. Everything in this movie looks like TV. And I'm not sure if it's just like the time period, because I also watched Gangs of New York, which I think is from like a similar time, like 2002. This movie's 2004. But maybe it's like a combination of the production value and the fact that like it's right before the age where everything gets really CGified. But everything just like looks, it just looks like modern TV. Like it looks like a scene from Riverdale. Like they're in the woods and there's this guy, everyone's speaking Aramaic, and this guy is hanging out by a tree, and there he is. He's Jesus. And he's like, it's very unclear what's happening in this first scene because he seems like he's hurt, but he's like not hurt yet, you know, but he's like moaning. He's like on the ground. He seems scared. And John and presumably some of these other apostles come by and they're like, oh, what's up? Like, it really doesn't matter any of what's said in this movie, except for like, I guess the parts that are directly taken from scripture. But so yeah, the apostles are like, hey, what's up? And Jesus is like, oh God, I don't know. We get a cut to Judas, and Judas, he goes to these dudes and the, like, I don't know if they're called the Pharisees or like, they're just these costumed, I mean, like, obviously they're wearing like, I guess, time appropriate religious costuming. And I guess that's what this movie kind of gets away with when you say like this movie's like crazy anti-Semitic, but like there's just all these like cartoon Jews, and I want to, you know, like I want to be careful because like those are real people. Those are all actors who, you know, did their role, but like I just can't believe. And the music, that's the thing, is anyone would have stopped this. Anyone but Mel Gibson. Like, if there were like a team of people working on this, they'd be like, we can't move forward with this because the villain of this movie is the Jews. And I understand that that's like kind of how it happens in the story, but that's why we can't do this story in the way that you want to do it. Because like Judas walks up to these, he goes to like this like temple and there's these just like cartoon Jews like standing there with their staffs and their beards, and they're all like, oh, they're speaking real Hebrew, and they throw him his 30 pieces. Oh my God. And that's the thing about this movie, is because like, what I mean by it's a comic book movie is that like, you can see it like being forced to go through its weird paces. Like Judas's like first line of dialogue is like, yes, we agreed, 30 pieces, right? And the guy's like, yes, 30 pieces of silver. And he throws the bag, and the bag goes in slow motion because lots of stuff in this movie, mostly the torture of Jesus, happens in slow motion for some reason. But like, he half catches the bag, the pieces go everywhere, and like the sound of the clattering, like, and this is another thing that I think I've been talking about this a little bit on the podcast, if not, or maybe I just saw Solo and it made me think a lot about like the extent to which a viewer is expected to bring their piece of the experience, right? Like when you're watching Solo, Jesus Christ, if the movie Solo were called Cool Space Dude Who You've Never Met, what a steaming pile of garbage. Like Solo, it's already a bad movie, but so much of that movie is literally just like reliant for basic support on the idea that you know that he's Han Solo and that you're rooting for him and that you want him to meet Chewie and get the Falcon and there's Lando Calrissian. So with the story of Jesus, we can assume that our audience, that our viewing public, is vaguely familiar with the story of, you know, like no one's Passion of the Christ wasn't called like very generous spiritual torture man. Very generous spiritual torture man. Oh God. I want to like write that down. That sounds like a good comedy character. but so the okay, so you, the viewing public, like, you know about Judas and about the 30 pieces of silver, and you know that, like, he's gonna regret it. So when the silver goes everywhere, you're like, oh no, that silver is like him going to hell. And so the guy, like, he's down on the floor, like, picking up the individual pieces of silver pathetically, like, pledging his life to betraying Jesus. And the guards are like, okay, now where's Jesus? We cut back to Jesus. He's still in the woods. There's mist. Literally, he's in, like, the misty woods. I'm sorry to be, like, mad about it, but he's in, like, the TV woods. He's on the outskirts of Riverdale, hunting for the Gargoyle King. And he's, like, lying on the ground. He's, like, praying to God. And this, oh my God, all of the music. I, like, don't want to do an impression of the music because it's all that, regional parentheses, perhaps ethnic signifiers of, like, Middle Eastern music from the Middle East, that I've been thinking about a lot, actually, because what was I watching? I was thinking about, like, when people put, like, tropical drums and stuff, or when people want to, like, make clear that, like, you're in the jungle, and, like, whether or not that's, like, how problematic that is as a device, and, like, how the, like, signifier of music can, like, how, I mean, like, maybe it's, like, microaggressions, but, like, small, like, signifiers that can be, like, extrapolated to be, like, ethnic signifiers or cultural signifiers, where, like, perhaps the creator or the director or the employer of them does not have to necessarily take full responsibility for invoking it in the way that you would were you to actually, like, put a stereotype in that place. But it's still, like, because we all exist within a collective unconscious of stereotypes, we all hear. I mean, like, I'm digressing, because that's not what happens in this movie. This movie is, like, full on intense Middle Eastern music the whole fucking time. Like, music is, like, overwhelming. It's oppressive. Everything about this movie is oppressive. Like, this movie is suffocating. But, like, the music, it's just, like, epic and tragic and, like, yeah, you have to already care about Jesus. And so now there's this guy in a robe, and this is me now, like applying my own sensibilities and, like, mind reading about, like, so it's the devil. It's the devil is this guy in a robe, and he, like, looks a little Voldemort-y, but, like, he also looks very androgynous. Like, it felt so strangely, like, nail on the head, and, like, you know, again, I cannot read Mel Gibson's mind, but, like, the symbolism of the devil being, like, an androgynous figure, and the devil's, like, a little bit sexy, like, the devil moves sensually, and, like, a maggot crawls out of the devil's nose. As there's this shot where it's, like, panning down the devil, and there's a maggot crawling in and out of his nose, and then it pans down to the bottom of his robe. I was so excited. I thought it was going to be hooves. I thought there were going to be hooves, but it wasn't. It was a snake. A little snake slithers out of the bottom of the robe. I will say, it felt like I've never seen this movie, but it felt like I had seen all of it before, and I'm wondering if that's because God is real. God is real. He's my worst enemy. Jesus looks like David Krumholtz. Jesus looks a lot like David Krumholtz. I think Jesus is Jim Caviezel. In this movie, it should have been David Krumholtz. And, like, it's just so funny also that David Krumholtz, the Jewish elf from Santa Claus. So Jesus is, like, the snake is, like, crawling on Jesus, and the devil's like, you love my snake. I'm all about I'm all about evil. And the music kind of swells, and then Jesus stomps on the snake. He, like, summons his willpower, and he stomps on the snake. So the guards show up, and they're like, hey, we're looking for Jesus. And Jesus is like, I'm Jesus. And then Judas is with the guards, because Judas has to, like, Jesus is like, I'm Jesus, but then Judas has to kiss Jesus to let them know that he's correct. And that's, like, the comic book thing again, is it's like, maybe in a panel, it didn't seem as weird. But, like, Judas goes out to the woods. He's in the misty woods at the edge of Riverdale. He walks up to Jesus. He kisses him on the cheek. And Jesus is like, you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? Like, it's so, like, Judas could have just pointed at him and been like, hey. And because these are all, like, plot points of this story, they're all given this, like, huge stage and huge musical swell, because it's like, there he is betraying the Son of Man with a kiss. So that, like, the simple fact that all of these basic story elements are also like not from, say, the 60s. I know my big comparison has been to a comic book, but they are from a religious parable from like what, you know, when were the Gospels written? Over 1,000 years ago? Like, this movie is insane. It's insane. It's so atmospheric. Thankfully, this movie was, I was very worried that this movie like won a bunch of Oscars and like was nominated for Best Director or something. No. It was a massive success. And I think that's, oh my God. And that also contributes to the just genuine toxic nature of this piece, because it is a form of propaganda. And I would have to look up the film's like worldwide numbers, but like, isn't it kind of like mostly like an American propaganda film? Like, doesn't it? Am I wrong about that? Was it huge in Australia? Was it huge in Europe? Like, it feels like it taps into, and this is like, I don't know, fuck me, but like some, I don't know. That's dumb. I'm not an American cultural critic, but it just, this movie taps into something absolutely vile about religion. This like, and I know, I'm not going to go full Ricky Gervais on you. I knew that eventually, like when we were talking about Passion of the Christ, we were going to have to talk about God, that fucking asshole. But the fact of this movie, like, you know, there are people who probably thought that it was like their religious duty to see this movie, and then they're like, I don't know, like it's like. Aren't there also people who like got worked up by this movie and who like, I don't know. I think I need to get back to the plot of the movie a little bit. apostle fight scene. So the apostles try to fight the guards and Jesus is like, hey, stop fighting. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. I'm not sure if all these quotes go where they go in the movie. Like, I don't remember the gospel being quite so. Is it the God? I keep saying the gospel. God, does Jesus die in the gospel? Is it, yeah. These are all, aren't all the gospels like about the life of Jesus? And like a lot of them tell his whole life. Well, not his whole life. God, should I have done a bunch of supplementary reading before I talked about Passion? Jesus surrenders to the guards. They put him in chains. They take him away. Cut to Mary, his mom. She like wakes up. She knows something has happened. And she and I think Mary Magdalene, like I would assume that the other woman is Mary Magdalene. And like, God, what a nightmare movie. So they're like reciting stuff from the Torah. They're scared. They're like holding each other. It's the night. They're saying, why is this night different from every other night? This guy runs in. He's like, they got Jesus. That's why tonight's different. So they are leading Jesus away, and they're already just kicking the crap out of him. Like, they're already, it's like 15 minutes into the movie, and you're like, ooh, God, they're hurting Jesus quite a bit. They drop him off a bridge. Like, they just drop him off this bridge, his chains, like, hang him tight, and he, like, looks up, and Judas happens to be standing under the bridge. And Judas and Jesus make, like, very pointed eye contact. Jesus is always looking at people like, what did you let them do to me? I mean, like, I have some perhaps unpopular opinions about Jesus, but Jesus gets like slowly pulled back up the bridge, and Judas, who is like, you know, falling apart since betraying Jesus, he's like standing there, and the choices that this movie makes, a demon scares him. Like, this spooky face appears behind him and goes like, rah! And Judas runs away from the face. So they take Jesus to, I would assume, a temple. And at the same time, the, like, unrest in town, it has, like, come to the attention of the, like, occupying Romans. You know, like, I would assume that Nazareth is, like, under the control of the Roman Empire. It's part of the empire. Yeah, and so, like, I would assume, Jesus Christ, I, like, and I'm, my humanities teacher would be so disappointed in me. But so the Romans are like, oh, there's unrest. We're going to tell our guy, who I would assume is Pontius Pilate. I don't remember anyone saying the words Pontius Pilate during the movie, but there's a guy who I'm pretty sure is Pontius Pilate. So Jesus is like at the palace, and someone, oh my God, someone like looks at a table, and then Jesus has a flashback to himself being a carpenter. And there's like a lot of flashbacks in this movie. There's like a flashback to Mary picking Jesus up when he falls when he's a boy. There's a bunch of flashbacks to the Last Supper. There's a flashback to like Jesus telling his followers that someone's going to betray him, giving speeches. And a lot of those flashbacks are, you're like, okay, I understand why this is happening. Then there's some flashbacks like this one where it's like, filling in that he's a carpenter. Like, he's literally, it just cuts to him, like, making a table. Like, it's a comic book movie. And he makes this table, and Mary comes out. And Mary's like, hey, the table you made is at the wrong height. And he's like, no, no, like, I'm gonna make chairs. And it's like, the implication of that scene is that Jesus invented modern, regular Western table height. Like, Mary's like, how are people going to sit on the ground at that table? Or they also can't stand. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm going to make an intermediate situation. Like, we're going to sit at a chair, sort of at half height. And Mary literally says, that'll never catch on. Jesus. Okay. So they get Jesus in this temple, and he's surrounded by, like, I would assume the respectful term would be Pharisees. They bring him in front of these cartoon Jews, and they put Jesus on sort of a kangaroo court of sorts. Jesus already looks dead. It's minute 12 of the film, minute 20 of the film, and they're yelling at him. They're like, "You're no king. You're a blasphemer." This scene, oh my God, just the idea, like, the villains of this movie are just the Jews, and they're just being, I don't know how to say it, they're just being, like, so Jewish. Like, over the course of the last few years, the sort of traditional, like, Reform Jew casual anti-Semitism that I've grown up with has kind of left a worse and worse taste in my mouth. You know, I grew up in New York City, surrounded by Jews, going to Passover every year. I myself was not bar mitzvahed, but like everyone in my family is Jewish. Like I grew up listening to Jackie Mason records and stuff. And this may be true of like a lot of, it just, you know, in Judaism, it feels like there's a lot of talking shit about Jews. And sometimes it feels like some of the most anti-Semitic portrayals of Jews are written by Jews. Jews, we hate ourselves. You know, it's a thing. Not to be like, oh, that's the most unique thing in the world. But like, there's this like self-reflexive, like biting your own back or like hitting your own guy. And so I can spot an anti-Semitic joke or a stereotype. And I used to be like, ha ha ha, that's so crazy. What a crazy world we live in. Ha ha ha, I can't believe that still exists. And now it's just become realer, and it's become sort of less funny to me to be like, oh, look, there's the cartoon Jews, you know, there's David Krumholtz, the Jew elf, you know, like maybe my casual calling of David Krumholtz, the Jew elf, is like ultimately putting my drop in the wrong bucket, you know, like, but so what all these Jews, they just get up and they're all just like, so I'm so sorry to say this, but like just they're just being so Jewish. Like, it just feels like Mel Gibson was like more Jewish and Jackie Mason was on set consulting with them and telling them how to, you know, like be more Jewish. And it's just a really bad scene. And you just can't get around the fact that the Jews are just like so the trial devolves. Now everyone's just like beating up Jesus. And someone grabs Peter. Peter's there and is like, and now Peter denies Jesus three times. So, and it also, like, it's bad scene work. It's bad scene work because in order for it to happen, it has to be like it's all really weird and stilted. It feels almost like Brecht or something. Like, someone's like, you know Jesus. And he's like, no, I don't. And then someone else grabs him and goes, I know you, you know Jesus. And he goes, no, I don't. And then he runs out and he sees Mary and Mary and he's like, oh my God, I denied Jesus. He's crying. He's like, I'm so unworthy. Judas goes back to like the head Jew and is like, listen, you need to free Jesus. You need to take back your silver. And the guy's like, no, I won't take it. Like, and also like the thing about like money and silver and whatever. I mean, not whatever, but I'm going to move on. So he won't take it back. Judas is like fucked up and he like falls to the ground. And, like, he's like lying behind like a cart and just like out on the street. And these two children see him and start kind of like taunting him, like making fun of him. And finally he lashes out and like tries to hit them. And they turn into little monster boys. One of them has this, like, old man fit. Like, you know when Bilbo Baggins in the Lord of the Rings movies, there's that, like, part where he, like, wants to see the ring? And Frodo's like, maybe I shouldn't show you the ring. And his face kind of turns into a monster for a second. He's like, show me it! And then he, like, realizes how, like, it still has this horrible stranglehold over him. One of the kids becomes, like, demon Bilbo Baggins. And one of them has this, like, horrible, like, messed up eye and, like... In the meantime, they bring Jesus before, like, the Romans, who I guess are the legitimate legal powers, who can, like, actually sentence... Like, the Roman is like, okay, Pontius Pilate's like, why'd you bring me this guy? What did he do? And the head Jewish guy is like, okay, he violated the Sabbath, he seduced people, he taught foul doctrines, we want him sentenced to death. And Pontius Pilate's like, didn't you just let him into Nazareth, like, 5 days ago? Now you want him dead? What's going on? He's the leader of a very dangerous sect. And so Pontius Pilate's like, okay, come here. And he takes Jesus kind of back behind the pillars, and he's like, what's going on? Why are they doing this? Why do they want you dead? Are you a king? And Jesus, for his part, like, at this point, if Jesus wants to, like, he's pretty resigned to what's about to happen to him, and he kind of, I mean, I hate to say that he brings it on himself, getting literally tortured to death. He doesn't, but, like, there are so many opportunities for him to be like, hey, yeah, these guys, they really want to kill me. I'm just trying to make everyone happy. But he's instead, like, the guy's like, are you a king? And he's like, my kingdom is not of this world. And now they're speaking Latin. So, everything that he says to Pontius Pilate is like, you don't have any power over me. Like, he said, but he's not saying it in, like, a peaceful way. I don't know. Maybe I'm, like, just applying my prejudices about Jesus. My prejudices about Jesus. So they take Jesus to, like, it turns out to be King Herod's house. This just, like, rich dude. And they're, like, making fun of Jesus. And he's like, all beat up. And they're asking him, like, questions. Are you a king? There's a leopard in the room. There's, like, one shot of this leopard. It's a full-grown leopard. That is, like, so a movie, already incredibly incredibly toxic movie, like, strangely written, strangely structured, very violent off the bat. Like, we haven't even gotten to the violence, but, like, already very violent. Terrible stereotyping of the Jewish characters, and suddenly there's a leopard. They brought a leopard on set. They took the time. That leopard made it into 1 second of the final film, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the leopard's in more shots. But, like, that's a full-grown leopard. Oh, God. I love it so much. So King Herod's like, listen, you're not guilty of anything. I can't sentence you to death either. So it's just these, like, these evil, quote-unquote evil Jews carting Jesus from place to place, half alive, beating him up, and asking for, like, anyone who has the legitimate power to kill him to kill him. Herod won't condemn. They bring him back to Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate's like, listen, I don't want to start an uprising. And some other Roman guy's like, listen, there already is an uprising. Like, we got to figure this out. So they have this meeting. They bring out these two dudes. They bring out Jesus Christ, and they bring out Barabbas. And he's like, listen, I got two guys here, Jesus and Barabbas. Barabbas is a murderer. They've both been sentenced to death. I can release one of them. Who do you want me to release? And they're all like, Barabbas. Barabbas is having the time of his life. Like, this whole crowd of people are all like, release Barabbas, crucify Jesus, release Barabbas, crucify Jesus. And Barabbas is, like, shaking his hand. He's like, whoa, yeah, Barabbas all the way. I think he raises the roof. They unchain him and he gets down and he's like, yeah, everyone. But so they want to, they're like, crucify Jesus. And Pontius Pilate's like, no, I'm not going to crucify Jesus, but I will torture him to death. So they all get, like, they tie Jesus to a thing and they all get these long canes and they just cane the shit out of him. And the devil, like, the androgynous devil in, like, a robe is, like, sneaking around behind the guards being like, damn, I love this. And the guards are laughing, and there's blood splashing on them. And then they get out these scourges, these, like, horrible whips, and they start whipping him, and the blades are sticking into his back and ripping his skin out. And, like, there's a small amount of what I believe is CGI in this film. It is Jesus' flesh being ripped off. They expose his ribs. At this point, what is it? Halfway point of the movie, we are an hour into the movie, and Jesus is showing his ribs. It is so difficult to watch. It's genuinely just horrifying. Everyone's like, oh, the blood, they turn him into a kind of pulpy former Jesus, and then they roll him over, and then they scourge him on the front, too. I do want to point out, God apparently did not want Jim Caviezel to do this movie. During this movie, he was accidentally scourged. He was, I believe, struck by light. Like, I can't believe, that's the other thing too, is that like God is telling you not to make this movie. And you're like, no, I need to show just the brutal, like the brutal torture of Jesus. So oh my God. And now while Jesus is being scourged, now the devil is walking around and he's got a big giant baby in his arms. He's got like an enormous baby, and the baby turns its face to Jesus. Jesus is like on the ground, and the baby has like an old creepy face. And so finally they stop and they drag Jesus off, and Mary clean Jesus' blood off of the sort of torture area. They like clean up all his blood because it's a comic book movie. He's a lot like Bruce Banner, like Peter Parker. His blood could create super soldiers, you know? They can't let it... at this point... Do I want to digress a little bit and just talk about, I still know what you did last summer, because I needed a palate cleanser for this movie. I don't know if you guys need a palate cleanser from hearing me just talk about Jesus having his flesh ripped off. I also like, I don't know, I kind of thought I was going to be a little more like, that there was going to be more intellectual value in this, that like, what does it mean about a viewing audience that like, this is our Jesus movie, that we don't really see him like healing people, that the point, like, and this is a lot of the criticism that the movie got, is that like, why does this movie have to be so violent? Why do we have to see quite what we see? And I guess part of it is just like the way, like I don't know too much about religion and sects of religion, but like there are varieties and strains of Christianity that are really, really, really heavy on the Jesus suffering. And the point of the Jesus story is that like he really, really, really suffered a lot. Like I was watching it and I was like, is the idea that he like suffered enough in one day for all of us? Like it's just like. And I'm trying to, you know, like you watch the movie, you're trying to think about like what it's like to be Jesus. You know, like maybe if I was Jesus and I knew that my dad was going to bring me to heaven, I could get scourged on the ribs. It wouldn't be a big thing. But so, you know, like you're making this movie, God is striking your leading man by lightning. Everyone's speaking Aramaic. Jesus Christ, it must have felt so like. I guess everyone who made this movie thought that they were like, I don't know, Christians. I'm afraid of Christians. I'm afraid of religion. I'm not going to Ricky Gervais you. I love that I've turned that into a verb. I mean, I'm sure that I'm not the one who did that. It's just like, whatever. I'm trying so hard not to talk about religion. But so yeah, there's a bunch of flashbacks in this movie. He's constantly like, he'll see like water running, and then it'll like cut to like water pouring at the Last Supper, and then like he'll see like sandals on the ground, and then it'll cut to like some sandals that he saw the other day in a shop window. Like he just he keeps seeing stuff and it reminds him of stuff. You also like you're watching this film. I don't know about you guys, but like, where the fuck is God? Where is God? If God doesn't show, like, I'm watching this movie, I'm like, when is God going to show up? At what point in this film will he finally step in and own up to, Jesus. Dumb. So Pontius Pilate, he's like, listen, here, look what I did. Look what I did to Jesus. We really fucked him up. Like, look at this guy. He looks like pulp. It's amazing that he's alive. His regenerative properties and adamantium skeleton have rendered him still living, a quivering mass of exposed nerves and flesh. What is this not enough for you Jews? And the Jews are like, no, we want you to murder him, please. Like, it's just like a crowd of screaming Jewish stereotypes. They're all like, crucify him, crucify him. And so the Roman guy is like, Jesus, do you want me to set you free? And Jesus, again, he's like a dick. He's like, You're just another pawn in the plan. Listen, everything's, I don't know, whatever is going to happen is going to happen. You got no control. I got no control. I'm going home, man. So Pontius Pilate comes back out. He gets himself this big bowl of water. He very theatrically washes his hands in the water. I would assume that that's the etymology of I wash my hands of it. He goes, I wash my hands. I'm innocent of this man's blood. Go crucify him. And he goes and they bring out Jesus. They're going to crucify him. So let's just talk about Ben Willis, the fisherman killer. In I Know What You Did Last Summer, just very briefly, we're just because we gotta have a palate cleanser, and for some reason my Passion of the Christ palate cleanser is I Know What You Did Last Summer, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. In the first one, it's a town in Maine. It's 4th of July weekend, a bunch of rowdy high schoolers, they're drinking and driving, they hit a guy, a fisherman, they think they killed him, they drop him into the water, they're not gonna tell anyone, turns out the fisherman's not dead, and also he's a serial killer, so he wreaks his revenge. He's the evil fisherman killer, Ben Willis. He has a hook. And that movie is fine. The next one is called I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. And that is, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer is literally a slasher classic. It is, you know, there are obviously like ways in which I, and we all use the media that we consume to sort of sate our various mental illnesses. Like what is liking something? What is finding art good? I've found a huge part of the art that has stuck with me the most and that has been the most a part of my life. Let me beautiful mind you here. So much of the art that I have found myself like really coming back to is the art that is just repetitive in a way. Like a slasher film is like a Mad Lib, and there's various things that are definitely going to happen, and then there's various things that could happen, and it's kind of like a bag of tricks. And the idea of a slasher film, it's like you're using cliches the way that you do letters. You're just arranging and rearranging cliche sentences in artful ways. There is, to some extent, no pursuit of newness. I Still Know What You Did Last Summer is a slasher movie where like the refrigerator magnets, the cliche salad become, it is so creative. The resort during monsoon season frame is so good. It carries everything else about that movie, which frankly is really uninteresting. Like there's a pretty shitty, like getting them there is dumb. The Rio de Janeiro stuff, like the fake radio contest, none of it makes a ton of sense. The fact that one of the teenagers is also the killer's son, the stuff about like literally this could have been, maybe it was a spec script. Maybe it was called like Resort Murder Party. But yeah, the actual I Still Know What You Did Last Summer of it all is kind of shoehorned in. The Ben Willis fisherman killer stuff is ridiculous. Like, how did he get out to a resort? What's the deal? He ends up working at the hotel, but the movie itself is just like, for its employment of the cliches, for its arrangement of them, there's something so strangely comforting to me about it. Like, I couldn't call it toxic media, even though it very arguably is. It made me, for just a little while, it made the dog stop barking in my head. That's exactly, the tanning bed sequence alone made the dog stop barking in my head. The keys sequence. I'm not going to get into this. Jeffrey Combs. So they give Jesus a cross. They're like, Jesus, here's your cross. You got to drag it through the streets. Everyone hates Jesus. The movie should have been called Everyone Hates Jesus because everyone hates him. Everyone's yelling at him. Everyone's spitting on him. They're beating him. There's slow motion torture of Jesus. Slow mo scourging of Jesus. Slow mo kicking of Jesus falling on the ground. Cross falling on him. Him falling on the cross. They shoot it like lovingly. Like Mel Gibson. I don't know. Like there's, you can't see into people's hearts. Some of this feels almost sexual. Like especially like the caning scenes. Like maybe I'm like showing my hand, but like you tie a guy to a block and you're hitting him with canes and the guys are like laughing and stuff. Just like Mel Gibson's seeming obsession with the loving shooting of these torture scenes, literal torture scenes. I find it baffling and it seems prurient to me. I think I've said that word a lot this episode. But so yeah, there's a, what happens? Okay, at this point, Jesus has literally, like, his face has become zombified. Parts of his face have been ripped off, so, like, his teeth are, like, skeleton teeth, his face is a skeleton. Like, half his face is a skeleton face. There's 50 minutes left in the movie. They're just beating Jesus. They're beating him and beating him and beating him in slow fucking motion. A lady tries to give him water. The guards swat her away. The other guy with the cross is like, leave him alone. And they're like, shut up. So Jesus, all he does is get beaten. And he's, one of his eyes is now swollen over. And the other eye, he just looks at you like he looks at you like he's like a horse that's like trying to make you feel guilty. You know when a horse is like really trying to give you the old guilt, and you're like, hey, you respect me and I'll respect you. Okay. So he's looking at people through his sad horse eye. Finally, this guy ends up, like, one of Jesus' disciples is, like, literally helping him carry the cross. He's nearly dead. He's got a zombie face. He falls. He can't get up. He gets up. He crawls onto the cross. He lies on the cross. They tie him to the cross. They are now, like, intensely flashing back and forth from what I assume is the Last Supper. And he's like, oh, there he is at the Last Supper. And then there they are putting the nails in and hammering each nail in slow motion, and you see shots from under the cross. You see the bloody nail coming out the other side of the wood. You see, like, the every single thing that hurts too, they do. It's like Mel Gibson was like, okay, so now I'm gonna hurt more, and then how does it hurt even more? Like, it feels like, I mean, I guess that's the point, but like, it's actual torture. Like, they're like, okay, so now we're going to hurt you at a 10. Now we're going to hurt you at a 12. Now we're going to hurt you at a 15. So they nail him to the fucking cross. It's just like the movie can only push one button. And it is this button of like making you watch this guy be so brutally, viciously. Like, I can only say that word and go viciously, like that intonation that I do when I'm trying to convey gravitas brutally. I can only do that so many times. Like, I don't know how. It's just like impossible to fucking watch. They bind him to the cross. They put him up. Now he's up. Everyone's watching. Everyone's looking at him. He's up on the cross. He still knows what we did Last Supper. He's praying for his tormentors. One of the other guys on the cross, this is another thing that happens in the Bible, is like one of the guys on the cross is like, hey, what's up? I don't remember what happens here. Where is God? When is God? Is God really going to just, I'm so disappointed in God. But, now there's like a montage, like suddenly the sky gets really weird. Jesus is like hanging on the cross, montage of the sky. This like looks like the opening theme to like Buffy at this point. Like, it's such a TV movie. Like, if this movie, I understand, what did it cost, $30 million? Like, if this movie were on, like, whatever it is, like, the Bible Channel or whatever, it would make perfect sense. Except for the blood. Oh, my God. So he's on, like, so Mary, his mom, comes up, and he's on the cross, and she kisses his feet, and she gets so much blood on her mouth. It is disgusting. They bathe him with a sponge on a stick. They cry. They hang around, sort of watching him up there. Finally, he has his why have you forsaken me moment. He's a skeleton man. Jesus is lying on the cross. He's looking up. He's got his thorns on his head. He goes, why have you forsaken me, Father? There's a slow zoom of his bloody face looking into the sky. Just like, again, the word is loving. Mel Gibson loves watching Jesus die on the cross. Finally, God sort of gets involved. Like, there's like a little earthquake, and like, and I have no idea why this happens. Like, I genuinely do not know what's going on at this part. But they all start, like, everyone picks up a hammer. Like, all the Roman guards pick up hammers because, like, the earthquake's happening. And they all start smashing all the crucified dude's feet, like fucking, like Kathy Bates in Misery. Like, they're just miserying all the feet. And a guy runs up to do it to Jesus, and someone's like, wait, Jesus is dead, don't worry. And they're like, well, we got to confirm that he's dead. So they take this big spear and they poke him in the side, and blood spurts out of Jesus' side. It just goes on, and it gets all over. Like, it literally, there's a scene in, like, I think the first Transformers movie where a Transformer pees on John Turturro. It's like the Transformer peeing on John Turturro, but it is Jesus' body dumping blood onto a Roman soldier. It's just getting all over him. And then I have absolutely no idea what this means, but suddenly everyone who is implied to be evil kind of just like looks up at the sky and goes like, like all the evil Jews are just like, oh no, rah! Like, maybe the temple gets destroyed. The earthquake destroys the temple. I guess that's what happens. But then like the androgynous devil, who like in this scene is like wearing a wig. Like, now the devil like has like long hair, but the devil like looks up and goes like, rah! So everyone goes, rah. And now Jesus is dead. And they take him down from the cross, and he lies in Mary's arms, like in that iconic statue. And then there's like, oh my God, oh my God. So I was like, okay, that's incredible. This is a 2-hour long movie. Like, that's the end of the movie. And then the end of the movie is actually this like artsy thing where like you see a rock like rolling away from a cave entrance. And then you see naked fucking Jesus. And he gets up, and you see him from the side, and you see his hand at his side, and it has a big hole in it. He's got an enormous hole in his hand, and he just walks out of the cave naked, and that's the end of the movie. Passion of the Christ. Jesus. What an insane movie made by an insane man. I can't believe, and what a successful, and it just goes to show, like, movies, oh God. Religious propaganda. All movies are propaganda. Oh my God. I'm just going to start delivering like weird poetry. God, what do I want to, is there anything I need to do? This has been a very strange toxic podcast. Is there anything else that happens in, hello? Well, hello there, Alejandro. How's it swangin'? It's me, Jack Black from I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. You dig? Wait, what? That's right. It's me, Jack Black's fun-loving island character from I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. Remember me? I have dreadlocks. Hey, hit me up if you need any of that weed, son. Okay, how do we feel about this? How do we, because I feel like your character, I remember being very problematic and probably not aging very well. Oh, whoa, that's cold. Oh, that's cold, man. I'm just trying to chill out on the island and smoke some of my lovely plants, my Mary Jane. Maybe see some honeys. Okay, I'm going to honestly, like, I we knew this was a risk when we started, but I'm going to have to ask you to, be murdered by a hook. Like, I think it's time that you get murdered by a hook. There's been certainly enough of you on this pod. What? You don't want me to be like a regular character, man? We could hang out and blaze it up together. Okay, I mean, honestly, as shitty as you are, I'm also oh, God. What if, is that the new bit of Toxic Podcast? Is it like my friend? I'm like, hey guys, don't be mean to my friend, dreadlock white guy Jack Black. I understand he's really problematic. He doesn't know. He's, you know what? Can you get out of here? All right, I'm leaving. Oh God. Is there anything else I wanted to do? Other than that insanely bad. Oh, you know what? Maybe I should just get a jump on next week and apologize for dreadlock Jack Black. So let me try to make something bigger out of this. Let me try to tie this all up with a fork and knife. Tie it all up with my big fork and my big knife. So Jesus, obviously this is a comic book adaptation. It makes a ton of money. Then, oh, maybe I should have watched Apocalypto. Mel Gibson, Monster Man, Daddy's Home 2. Violence, devil. Well, I mean, obviously, let me just get on the record right now that I would sell my soul to the devil. There's a variety of things I would sell my soul to the devil for. Like, I would like to. Last night, honestly, maybe we'll talk about this. Last night, I looked a little bit into witchcraft. Sort of casting spells. I mean, obviously, as soon as you get into witchcraft, the first thing you think about is, like, morals. And, like, also, like, I don't really know if witchcraft is for me. Like, I don't think the spirits, I don't know. Hopefully I've suffered enough that the spirits are like, okay, will Allah, like, I'm about to fill a fucking jar with salt, man. I'm going to write a goddamn name on a piece of paper and fill it with salt to divest an individual of their power over me. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe next week this podcast will be hosted by a demon. Certainly that would be great. Oh God, I love those Paranormal Activity movies. Well, yeah, obviously, please continue suggesting things that you want me to talk about. Toxic Podcast lives and dies by its fans. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I was away for a while. No one asked where I was. I don't mean to guilt trip you, but no one was like, hey, where's Toxic Podcast? Wow, that's fucking insane. Fuck me. God, I'm such a bad I was like, it's time to return with an amazing episode, but this is the cranky episode. This is the episode where I'm a cranky, you know, I've got to get my agent on the line and tell him stop acting like it's nappy time. Well, if I were Jesus, I wouldn't be as forgiving. I mean, I don't have any deep, you know, Jesus is like Batman. There's nothing new to say about him. Or perhaps Jesus is like the Joker. That makes more sense. Jesus is like the Joker. Oh, there's a new Batman movie. Also, Alejandro Collini as Batman. I'm going to try to figure out how to solidify this bit, but Alejandro Collini, that's my name. I'll say it a million times. Love the sound of that name. I want to be the new Batman. I think I deserve it. I think I'd be great at it. Also, there's a show coming up on February 17th. That's a Sunday, 8 p.m. at the Velvet Lounge in Brooklyn. It's a free show. My friend Ryland Duncan and I are hosting it. It's called Somebody Please Take Our Port... Somebody Please Take Our... God damn it. Don't come. Don't come. You know what? Don't come. Don't come. This is such a bad ending. Wow, I wonder how bad I can make this ending. Let's... You know what? There's no saving it. Let's see if we can find the bottom. That's what I used to do sometimes. When I was very angry at my friends and very drunk, as I would be like, there's no saving this situation. I'm going to make everyone in the room miserable. And and here I sit, the host of an alone podcast. Well, in any case, I'm doing great. I'm very healthy. Yeah, that's fucking true. Next week, not next week, but continue suggesting things. I'm going to do a True Blood episode at some point. And keep watching the stars, and he died for your sins, and, you know, we all know, we all know who's pulling the strings. God, Jesus, damn. All right.